Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
I'm sure the conclusion from this opinion is going to be that you got to have you got to amend the Constitution to fix that. As we all know, it's a big challenge to amend the Constitution. It's only happened 27 times in our whole nation's history. And the reason is because you got to have two-thirds of both chambers of Congress and three-fourths of the states to ratify. It's usually at least a many years long process and very complicated. We'll see. I'm sure there's going to be lots of discussion about that. I will say I'm very disappointed in that outcome. I think it subjects the country to serious challenges going forward, and we'll have to deal with it.
We'll start with the major news stories this week. The one major one being birthright citizenship. Hey, this is Wiggins America. Welcome to a celebratory weekend. Hopefully you got a couple days off. We got Friday off, so I guess we got an extra day off because it was not on a weekend. But I will be doing all of the 4th of July celebration stuff this whole weekend for the station. So I guess in that way, I kind of am not off myself. But it's stuff I love doing. The music for fireworks is something that I absolutely love doing every 4th of July, 3 hours, commercial-free, Paramount Men's Medical Center, making that happen this year. And it is stuff that I love doing. So hopefully you are a part of that. I'm going to get to this news in a second here that the Democrat socialists continue to win. But before we do, let's talk about birthright citizenship. The Supreme Court has denied the constitutional request that the phrase within the 14th Amendment be considered that they are subject to the jurisdiction thereof. That would be illegal immigrants having babies, or really any immigrant, any person who's not a citizen of the United States having a baby in the United States. If you were born in the United States, you automatically get citizenship, and that is being badly, badly abused now. And there are a lot of arguments on each side as to what subject to the jurisdiction thereof means. But this ended up being not really a close case. I guess not really anyway. It was 6-3 in favor of keeping it the way that it is. So interpreting subject to the jurisdiction thereof being just born here, which I would tend to disagree with. But I do think that this is one of those really good classic arguments that they say, well, here's the text. What were they intending from the text? And then you have a bunch of people trying to sway the justice's opinion on that. And take it out of the current political environment, and it becomes a really interesting constitutional argument. However, we can't take it out of the current political environment because Democrats have forced us to consider that was a badly written law, badly written amendment, because they have abused it. Democrats have specifically and intentionally abused that amendment. And so now Congress wants to fix it, but they can't because Democrats are the ones holding it hostage. So you had the court as kind of a hope that, oh, maybe they can step in and provide clarity and say that this meant what we think it probably meant, which is that you have to be subject to the laws of the country and not, subject to another nation's laws like they're doing in California right now, where Chinese nationals and even sometimes like full-on Chinese spies are having children in the United States and they not may not even be here. They're having them via surrogate. And then that kid is immediately then shipped back to China and has U.S. citizenship. I mean, this is real. This is really happening, and it's happening a lot. Congress is not willing to address it because Democrats aren't willing to address it. This is not an issue that Republicans are shying away from. They would absolutely stop this, and we hope that the courts would step in. But you have an entire party, half the country, that wants to abuse that system. And then they don't like the ramifications when you have to enforce the law with things like immigration and customs enforcement, a.k.a. trigger word, ICE. Anyway, that's the long diatribe I have there. I do think, though, that there's a possibility that the SAVE Act, if it passes, could curtail some of this. But I will say, constitutionally, back to that point, I'm not sure how, because I don't know how. I really don't know. I'm not saying I don't think it's possible. I'm saying I don't understand how Republicans are trying to pass the SAVE Act with a simple majority. I don't know how they're getting around the Democrat filibuster in the Senate. I really don't. And somebody can fill me in. You can, you know, message me on Facebook or tag me on Twitter, X at Radio Wiggins, and say, well, this is how. But typically that's done with just spending bills. So if they're attaching this to a spending bill, then maybe that's exactly what it is. And that's what I've heard people say that they would do. Maybe that's what they're trying to do right now. But then I don't think that it'll actually pass. Even if Republicans pass it, I think that somebody like the Senate parliamentarian or somebody will come along and go, oh, you can't actually include this part of this because it's not related to spending. That's just me, and that's just me getting that out in the open. All right. Like I said, let's get to the other headline before we get to the more fun stuff of the week. Democrat socialists are winning in U.S. cities with the message of getting stuff done. This is from The Guardian. Yes, they are saying we are competent. They're saying Democrats typically aren't getting enough done, but we socialists, we will get a lot done. And it's to mixed result whether you say that Mamdani has gotten a lot done or not. He faces restrictions that are within our constitutional form of government that are limiting his ability to get socialist things done, but he is still getting some things done. But it just amazes me, and I'll kind of conclude on this point, that of all these socialists that are winning in Democrat primaries, their message is, we know we have a reputation of incompetence. Oh, Democrats, socialists. Why don't you just drop the Democrat part? You're just socialists. That's all you're doing. You don't really have any other worldview other than socialism, and you hate capitalism, and you don't like the country, and you are winning. And that is a problem for the future of America. Although, if you start to lose the middle, if you start to lose middle Democrats and independent voters because you keep going so far left, I guess you could relegate yourself just to the deepest blue areas. That could happen. And I guess, in a way, it is happening. You're just not seeing full-on socialists win governorships yet. You're seeing them win mayoralships primarily because that's where the concentration of hard left voters is. And if you kind of keep it there, yes, you'll see the death of many American cities, and that's terrible, and that's a tragedy. But it may not affect the rest of the entire country the way that it's being painted. I don't know. That's just my opinion. We'll see how it goes. This is Wiggins America. We have a lot of good news coming up. We're going to talk about TDS coming up next. I don't know if that's good news, but we got a lot at the end, some weird stories that maybe you haven't heard yet. And we're going to have a good time because we are celebrating 250 years of American prosperity here on 97.1 FM.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't comment on this topic a lot on my show anyway. I think we talk about it a lot on Annie's show, and that is the whole Trump derangement syndrome effect on people. I don't mention it a lot simply because I don't know. I don't know why. I really don't, because I do believe it's a real thing. Trump derangement syndrome is just become kind of an acronym, TDS, that people just kind of throw at anything. But it is worth examining, and I think this is almost part of the look back at history, that we'll look back and see what this guy did to people in their souls, you know? And that's what's so strange about it, is that there is a portion of the population, and I always refer to, it's about 30% of the country, it's about 30 to 35% who are really obsessed with Trump. They're anti Trump, like he's the center of the universe in a way, in that he is the source of all problems and all their problems. And if he would just go away, I could finally have peace. And in some ways, that's actually right. For whatever reason, he presses that button in their belly that just makes them vomit. And again, it's going to be something to really examine post-Trump to see why that was the case. You know, in 20 years, there'll be books about this. There probably are now, but there'll be good books about it then, because we're still in the midst of it. Anyway, the reason I bring this up is because, first, that poll, why I say 30 to 35% always of the country, is that there was a poll that came out after the debate between Trump and Biden. And that was an obvious turning point in the nation, because it caused the domino effect quickly to happen, where Joe Biden was no longer the nominee. He was going to lose, and everybody knew it. And they kind of had sort of made peace with it, but they didn't realize how bad it was until that debate. And I'm kind of projecting here, because I think there are probably some people who were still delusional and thought Biden was going to win that. It was never going to happen. But he was going to start dragging senators down with him, and that's when it became too much for the establishment to handle. So they turned on him, even though the money was still with him. It turned after that, and then it became, well, who's going to be the successor? And then, as I remember it, and it's never been publicized that this was for sure, but the Biden team, probably Jill Biden or Hunter, whoever was running his socials, came out and said that they were endorsing, if it wasn't going to be them, if they're going to drop out, then we're going to endorse Kamala. Well, the weird thing was that Kamala wasn't really on good footing with the Bidens. You know, there was a lot of infighting within those two, a lot, and their camps too. But Biden and probably Jill were so mad at the Obamas and the Cloonies and the party brokers that turned on them, that they said, oh, you think you're going to replace us with your preferred candidate? Nope, here's who we're endorsing. We're endorsing Kamala. Just to stick it to them, like it's going to stay with our administration, even though they weren't even really on good terms. So that's, as I've read it, the way that that happened, because they were not going to pick Kamala. They were going to pick somebody like Mark Kelly or Josh Shapiro, who are from Arizona and Pennsylvania, respectively, as kind of more... moderate isn't even the right word, but palatable Democrats. They're not in policy moderate, but they are a little bit more just normal looking people. Like they don't stammer and they don't do the word salad stuff, and they're not walking around shaking hands with ghosts and that kind of stuff. So in that sense, they would probably have a better chance, as Kamala was supposed to, but she couldn't. She was terrible. Anyway, I say all that to say that after that debate, long way around here, after the debate between Trump and Biden, where Trump obviously won without even really trying, like Biden just lost that badly. Trump had a fine debate. Biden was barely there, because he was always barely there. And that's the best they could muster out of him right there. After that, they asked America in polls who won the debate. And between 30 and 35, I think it was, the average was around 32% of America said Biden. Now that's just politicking. You're not telling the truth. You're just projecting what you want to happen onto a poll. Maybe because you're trying to influence the poll, or maybe you genuinely believed that Joe Biden won that debate simply because you have Trump derangement syndrome. You hate the man that badly that you have no objectivity. And that is literally, I use that poll because that is 30 to 35% of the country views the world through those glasses. And they still do. And so everything that they decide, every protest they go to, every Tesla they burn is through the lens of, yes, but this will help stop Donald Trump. Why am I bringing all that up right now? Because of the latest ridiculous story that feeds into that premise. It is about the stupid reflecting pool. I shouldn't even say stupid. The reflecting pool is beautiful, but it had been full of algae. And this is all stuff that I didn't even know. I've been to D.C. for like half a day. I really want to go while Trump's in office because I'd like to, you know, go in the White House and I'd like to meet these congressmen and stuff, the people that we have access to that, you know, maybe someday if I'm not working in radio, I would really like to take advantage of that. But this reflecting pool, Trump cleaned it up, spent a little money doing it, not a lot. And then the algae's starting to return and they can't decide whether it was because they didn't clean it right or they should have taken longer to clean out the pipes because there was still algae in them or somebody's trying to return algae to it because they hate Trump. But we do know this, and I'll read this headline. Reflecting pool caulking has been cut with a sharp knife or razor, the NPS says, in a court filing. And this stuff is happening daily, that people are going and vandalizing the reflecting pool at the Washington Monument because Trump cleaned it up. Now, that is so screwed up. And I'm not saying that's 30% of the country, but that is a percent of that 30% that is insane. That you hate just anything based on what he likes or does. So you have no objectivity. Back to that point. You can't really make any decisions about life because you're being pushed around by the wind that's blowing at any given moment. So you might decide in this moment that, you know what, I actually kind of like Iran because Trump is at war with them. Or I really hate Israel because Trump has made them an ally. I actually hate tax cuts because Trump has cut taxes. I want my taxes to be higher. That's my patriotic duty. Like, these things don't make any sense. You know, and you're pro-LGBTQ, but you're in favor of Islam growing in the United States. Like, that's why there's no follow-through on the thoughts among that group of people, because it's all based on this tornado that's Donald Trump, and they can't take their eyes off of it. And in some ways, I think Trump probably likes that. I mean, he is sort of made for that. He's made for attention, and it works. And you know what? He's actually a pretty good governor when it comes down to it. I use governor in the small g sense. He's pretty good at it. He doesn't really get credit. You know, in the midst of everything, last point I'll make here before taking a break. Really just kind of going here, right? In the midst of everything, we tend to compare a president or a governor or whatever against perfection while they're governing. And that's fine, but that also makes your favorability rating go down because you go, well, he's not perfect. And in a lot of senses, he has done things that I don't like and I wish he would have done differently. I'm not going to get into that now, but there are things. But when you compare him to the alternative, which is really the only reality that we're living in, you either got Trump or you got Kamala Harris. You either got Trump or you got Joe Biden. You either got Trump or you got Hillary Clinton. That's the options that you have. Now, you can try to influence things to get to that point. But once it's there, that's the option. So the best way to compare anybody is to who they would have, who would have been in that office instead. So would Trump have been a better president than Hillary Clinton? I say yes, and therefore I'm supportive of it. Is Trump a better president than Biden? Absolutely. Is Trump a better president than Harris? Absolutely. Can you imagine some of the issues that we're facing right now as led by Kamala Harris? Of course not. They would be mismanaged. We would be in further debt. I mean, we're in worse debt than we were when he took office because they've curtailed some spending but not enough. But we'd be even worse, and inflation would be even worse. You know, throughout Biden's presidency, he spent like a drunken sailor while telling everybody that inflation was a problem and naming the act the Inflation Reduction Act. These are the people who don't know how to govern. who, when they're in office, they do a terrible job. So I compare the governor or the president against that, and I think that's the best way to do it. Anyway, I'm going long here. We're going to take a short break and be right back.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I keep talking about good news. This is good news mixed with bad news. The first one is that St. Louis has one of the least vibrant and least welcoming downtowns in the world this time. So we've gone beyond just in the country, and now we are one of the least vibrant in the world. This is from Fox 2 Now. Joey Schneider wrote this less than a week ago. It says, from July 8th to November 4th of 2025, so basically the entire second half of last year, a Gensler research team surveyed residents about their own city. So this wasn't people looking from outside in. This was people from inside their own city, their perception of where they live. And you're talking to people who are in downtown saying, okay, what do you think? Is the city authentic? Yes, actually, we got a 70% there. That was the highest we scored on this entire list. The next one was memorable, 67%. Now, I don't know compared to other cities how this does, because then you get down into the lower ones like walkable, we were at 58%. Welcoming was very low at, I guess, 53%. And that's compared to other cities. I went, oh, 53%, that's not too bad. But compared to others, we are the lowest. Vibrant, 50%. Yikes. And this is from people who are there. You know, they're actually investing their time into making this happen. And they're saying, no, it's just not. On the concept of a vibrant downtown, St. Louis, at 50%, finished tied with Portland, Oregon for worst in the United States and tied for second worst globally, ahead of only one city in Costa Rica. My goodness. On the concept of a welcoming downtown, St. Louis finished at 53%, worst in the United States, and fourth worst in the world, only ahead of, listen to these cities, Rio de Janeiro, Athens, Greece, and then that town in Costa Rica again, which, man, why would anybody want to go there? Overall, St. Louis ranked in the bottom half of all 75 cities in every category measured. Its best finish was in memorable, where we placed 45th. I would say we actually do have a pretty memorable downtown with some iconic places and sites. But I guess we ourselves don't think so of ourselves. And I don't want to be a part of that problem. I'm just reporting this right now, and I'm not reporting it gladly. I'm just saying we've got to fix this. The more that we can get things like crime under control, which I would have to say the state of Missouri is doing a good job of. Kara Spencer, the mayor, is doing a good job of working with the state on that. And so that is changing. You know, the crazy problems of the prosecutor, of Kim Gardner, those days are gone. But the reputation is hard to shake. And so while crime and I don't even know, homelessness doesn't seem to be getting a whole lot better, but crime is, and the perception internally, I would say, like, if you're paying really, really magnifying glass close attention, some of these things are trending in the right direction. But it's going to take a while before people start going, oh, no, I actually want to be there. I want to spend money there. I want to invest money there. Because ultimately, that's what we need, is we need investment money. And when I say investments, you probably think like hedge funds and private equity and these words that don't mean anything and they sound like magic money up here. That's not actually what I'm talking about. That comes along, of course, that, and there are big companies that are investing right now. Even where I stand, this building's been bought in the last year, and they're putting some money into it, and that's nice to see. The building next door, they're putting in maybe a data center. I don't know. They're being kind of quiet about it, but they're doing major renovations, and so there's some money coming in there. And there is some money starting to come in from bigger funds. But what you really need is your little guy. You need your restaurateur to say, oh, I want to be on Washington. And that was happening 15 years ago. It's just not happening as much now. I want to be downtown by the ballpark. I'm going to open up a new restaurant. There was a nice poke bowl restaurant that opened near the ballpark that is now gone. Rent is rather high there, I assume. But there, these things have to happen. You have to have people who are willing to not just bring restaurants, but clubs and, you know, parking and just random things that you have to make your downtown vibrant. And we just are not in a place. I think I'm saying this because I am that guy. I'm the guy who has like a little bit of real estate. I don't have a lot of money, but I am starting to invest in businesses and things. And I'm not looking at downtown at all. And I would. I'm not like so political that I would say, oh, forget it. It's a blue city. No way. If there's money to be made, and that's the language that everybody's speaking, I guarantee you that people would do it more, but they're just not. After COVID, I mean, it's been a lot of things that have hit blue cities. And I'm talking about St. Louis, but I'm talking about pretty much every city. And the further left they go, the worse they're getting. You know, I talked about it in the first segment. These Dem socialist mayors are going to completely destroy cities. Good news, we do have a Democrat mayor. I don't think that'll ever change, but she's not crazy. And she's not doing stuff that's going to destroy the city in the name of like wacko ideology. So I think there is hope there. And we're in a red state, and Missouri is moving in the right direction with a lot of tax policies. So there's a lot of hope, but it's a bad survey. It's a bad survey, and I had to report it because I want it to change. I resolve here at the end of the show to bring you a segment that is just good news, or at least it is fun news. The first is that while it is incredibly hot, the 4th of July special is this weekend, and whether you are listening to this pre-show or after show, whether you listen to the podcast or whatever, I'm going to give you a little taste of it, and it's a really good one, but not yet. First, I'm going to give you the fun news. One is that Father's Day, I know we're a couple of weeks removed from this, but it was a story that I remembered this morning. I thought, oh man, that's such a cool story. I need to tell that. So real quick, on Father's Day, I was traveling and I couldn't really be around my family. So my wife texted me happy Father's Day and that she was going to give me something, you know, once I got home. And then my son got on the phone and he was like, Dad, I got you something for Father's Day. And he's nine. He just turned nine, actually. I said, what'd you give me? And he goes, I got you $3. I was like, that is maybe the best gift, the best Father's Day gift, certainly, that I've ever gotten. $3. And he said, I'm going to give it to you when you get home. So, but I wanted you to know today that you have $3 waiting for you. And it just reminded me that A, kids have no idea the value of money or anything really around money, like what it even means, but they know that it means something. And for him to be giving me $3 meant a lot to him, and my goodness, it meant a lot to me. So that was really cool, and it reminded me that he's, you know, 9 years old is not that old. I start to think about, oh man, you're really growing up, and I'm like, no, you're not growing up. It was great. So that's the first one. The second one is something that I just personally really like. If you don't like the Beatles, then you won't really care. But the Holy Grail of lost Beatles footage has been discovered. And no, we're not talking about, it's lost Beatles footage. So there was all that footage for the Let It Be documentary that they just came out with a year or two ago on Disney. And then I was really excited because they released a new Beatles track. And maybe you didn't know this, but it was after that documentary. It was the last Beatles song. And it really was the last one that they could release at all, because George Harrison and John Lennon aren't going to be playing any new music. I don't know if you knew that, but they did on this track. And so it was originally a John Lennon song that he left on cassette to Paul McCartney. And then Paul McCartney, when they did the anthology, they did the two new tracks, which were Free as a Bird and then Real Love. And then this was the third one, but they couldn't do anything with it. It was kind of a crappy recording. And so after doing the Let It Be documentary, they released, or Paul McCartney in particular said, man, the technology's gotten so much better. I wonder if we could go back to that third song that we did for the anthology. And they did. And of course, the technology had gotten enough better that they could make out John's lyrics well enough on that cassette recording to redo a song. And because they had started recording it during that session, they had George Harrison playing guitar on it. So they had all the parts, and then Ringo and Paul came back and did their parts, and they released Now and Then in, I think, 2022 or 3. I can't remember the year now, but it was just recently. And it's a really good track. And I think you should check it out if you haven't yet. But this is all like after that. So like there's not a lot of Beatles news all the time. When they release a new song, that's a huge deal. But this was footage from the first ever Beatles appearance on British TV called Top of the Pops in 1964. Now, it might have been their first appearance on that show. I think they had maybe been on TV before. But this was like a big, big show. It's still around in some regard. This was they call it the Holy Grail of Beatlemania because everybody knows this exists, but they thought it had been completely erased because the common practice was once you record it, they didn't keep the tapes forever, and they would re-record over them just to reuse tapes. But the footage they discovered somebody gave it to a film preservation group called Film is Fabulous, and they announced that it had unearthed a complete 35mm film. So it's not even part of it. It's the whole thing. And it is four performances of Can't Buy Me Love, because it was all recorded, and then two performances of You Can't Do That. And most importantly, it includes all the banter between them, between songs. So if you're a Beatles fan, there could be some cool new stuff coming your way pretty soon. Now, for the final cool, fun, good news thing of this hour and this segment and this show, I am going to play for you a bit of what you either have heard or you missed for the Music for Fireworks special right here on 97.1, 4th of July night. This is, I think, my favorite part. So 3 hours of music and like little speeches from presidents and cartoons and things like that. I love doing the special every year, but it's a lot of work. And this is one that I never fail to miss because I'm setting it up here. This cartoon is from 1948, and there's no big cartoon characters in it. There's some Porky Pig stuff that I play separate that's from that same era, but this is a different cartoon. And I think it's a Warner Brothers based on the way the animation looks. And you may actually remember watching this cartoon from when you were a kid, because if you watched cartoons enough like I did, you saw all this stuff. And it was very patriotic, obviously. 1948, you're talking about World War II era. And so everybody's pulling together. But they go into stuff here that's not just like, hey, America's great. They go into why it's good. And they spotlight how people are going to tear it apart. Like, what is the enemy of this country going to do? And they're not talking about a foreign enemy. They're talking about a domestic enemy. How will we be destroyed from the inside? It's fascinating. And so I'm telling you this because the clip itself from the cartoon is like 4 minutes long, and I really don't want to cut it down because it's all really good. So I'm going to play the whole thing here. But it tells you about victimhood and how people will use identity things to start to tear divisions in the country. This is in 1948. They're not using the same language that we use. They're not saying, oh, it's identity politics and all the stuff that we say now. What they call it is isms. They say, watch for people who come along and claim that they are a part of blankism. And of course, they're going to say things like communism. But they say all these isms because they're saying factions will come along that are going to say that they are a different, you know, different people within the country. Instead of us all coming together, they will fracture the country using isms. And instead of me going on and on about it, I'm going to stop right there and I'm going to play the whole thing for you. Here you go.
Work, it will
hurry, step right up, folks. Here's the answer to your problems, Dr. Utopia's sensational new discovery, isms. Ism will cure any ailment of the body politic. It's terrific. It's tremendous. Once you swallow the contents of this bottle, you'll have the bountiful benefit of higher wages, shorter hours, and security. Enormous profits, no strikes. Remember, you're the big boss. Government control, no worry about votes. Name your own salary. Bigger crops, lower costs. Why, ISM even makes the weather perfect every day. And now then, because we are introducing this amazing item for the first time in this country, it isn't going to cost you 1 cent. All you have to do is sign this little scrap of paper, and you get your bottle absolutely free.
I hereby turn over to ISM Incorporated everything I have, including my freedom and the freedom of my children and my children's children, in return for which, said ISM promises to take care of me forever.
Pardon me.
And who are you, my good man?
I'm John Q. Public.
Ah, my fine friend, you're just in time to share this generous and gigantic offer. Sign right here.
Mind if I read it first?
Hurry up!
Keep your shirts on, boys. Including my freedom. Freedom? Well, sign away my freedom. Why, this is ridiculous.
Don't be corny, brother.
Sure, our system of free enterprise isn't perfect. But before we throw it away for some imported double talk, let's turn the clock back a few years to see what it's done for us. For example, back in the 1890s, Joe Doakes was just a guy who liked to tinker around his barn. Some people thought Joe was lazy. Some even thought he was nuts. But one day, he had an idea. And because he was free to dream his dream and tinker, Joe had a chance to make something of himself and his idea. So, of course, some people didn't think so much of Joe's idea, but that didn't stop him. So Joe got some money from young Aunt Minnie and Uncle Angus and Grandpappy and Mr. Titus. When Joe's friends and relatives used their savings to help him buy tools and property, they were capitalists. Don't blush, folks. It's nothing to be ashamed of. Now, naturally, Joe needed some help. So he hired Willie Lumpkin, who was out of work anyway. And before long, Willie had the know-how and became skilled laborer. Because capital, management, and labor worked together, Joe's idea grew. It grew and did things even he never dreamed of. Today, the automobile industry provides millions of jobs that never existed before. And remember, this is a story of only one industry. There are thousands more scattered all over the United States whose history of development is pretty much the same. We've built a country under the American system that sends more young people to high school and college than all the rest of the world combined. Why, even in the Depression, our wages bought more food, clothing, travel, and entertainment than the wages of any other people in the world.
Now, if you're not impressed by that, then I got nothing else for you. And in fact, I don't have anything else for you. This is the end of the show. Thank you for being here on Wiggins America. Of course, if you're listening to this after the fact, like the podcast, then you missed Music for Fireworks. But if you're listening to this on Saturday morning, then you should listen to Music for Fireworks tonight. That would be July 4th night for 3 hours. Kind of leading up to dark and then past dark, past your fireworks. It'll be right there for you. All this kind of stuff. And I do a lot of work to prepare this every year. Hope that you can tune in and enjoy it. We'll see you later.
Like the flower and the scent of summer, like the sun.
America.
Well, the truth may come in strange disguises. Send the message to your mind.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.